Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. And today, the part of interesting person is being played by Chris Ippolito. Chris is a funnel strategist and the host of the Get Coached podcast, which I've been on. It's a pretty cool podcast. His goal is to help professional coaches no longer be the best kept secret in their market. Chris, how are you doing today?
Doing great, David, or D Fish, I should say.
Hey, just don't call me late for dinner and we're good. I also do want to make sure I say thank you to our sponsor today, Beguile Brewing, right here in Chicago. I am drinking today their American Blonde Ale brewed with honey, just called simply Beguile Blonde. And I'm not going to lie, it's a good one. It's tasty. I know that I always say the beers I'm drinking are tasty, but you know, they always are. So it works out well. Chris, here's my question for you.
Sure.
What parallels would you put between building your own business and having a child? Because I know that you are like me, are on the path of running your own business and having a kid. Have you seen any parallels?
Oh yeah, tons. There's nonstop learning.
Whether you like it or not, right?
Oh, absolutely. And there's like, there's nurturing, there's the fact that both are delicate in a sense, right? Like fragile is a better way of saying right. It. You're emotionally invested in it. You're financially invested in both. There is so many parallels between starting a business and raising a child. It's actually kind of crazy. I'd never even really thought about it.
So, you know, when you think about those parallels, because I think you're right. I mean, there are a lot of similarities. In fact, you just said something that I even think about. What advice can you think about or you think about getting parenting advice? Because I'm sure you, like me, like every other parent, when you're pregnant and you're about to have that kid, everybody has advice for you.
Yeah.
What are some of the good parenting tips that you got that you think you could actually apply to starting a business? And I just thought of this question, so I'm actually going to try to answer it too.
Yeah, that's I think the best advice that was received and I would want to reciprocate and share would be patience, to be honest. Let me expand a little bit on is like, you're going to have an infant who is heavily reliant on you, obviously. And you need to have patience with them because they can't communicate with you and you can't obviously communicate with them. And I feel like in a sense, that's what a new business is. You can have all the plans and strategies in place. But then once you start kind of going and getting into the thick of things, things evolve and change so quickly that you have to adapt and almost in a sense, be patient with the whole process of it. That's what I mean by patience, is being patient with the process, because they're both very long endeavors and journeys. If you embark upon that journey, just know that it's going to take time. So you have to have patience with both of them.
I love that. And I was thinking about, you can't be prepared, right, for a kid. And, you know, you're told that, and you no matter how much work you do on the nursery or how many diapers you have ready, like, you really aren't prepared. But that is actually very similar, I've found, with new business owners. But I think one of the traps we get caught in with business is we do think that there is a level of preparation that if I just do this much business planning, then everything will be okay and I will definitely be successful. Yeah. And it's funny because I know business owners, very competent people, by the way, who started up a new enterprise, did a ton of business planning, and it still ultimately did not work. And in some ways, it's almost like they overplanned, right? And they weren't flexible enough.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and I was definitely guilty of this with any endeavors in the past, is that you almost use the planning as a way to delay the actual work. And you kid yourself, and you have this illusion that you are putting in work, and like, I am working on my business, when in actuality you're just planning, which planning is good. Don't get me wrong. Like, I went into what I'm doing right now with some planning, but at a certain point I had to give myself a timeline and say, I'm launching on this date, and
right, no matter what,
I got to work towards it. And I did have to bump it by a week, but that's better than never launching at all. Right. So planning important. What's even more important, and it's such cliche advice, but like, you got to do and take action. And then as you're going through the process, you start learning, adapting and shifting. And yeah, it's really just go in and do it. It's the same with a kid. Read all the books you want. Your kid's not going to go by that manual. You know what I mean? Like, right. you're going to learn as you go.
Yeah. You can't turn to page 37 and be like, oh, that's why he's been screaming for 30 minutes. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Or that's why he's been an angel for 2 days, you know, and then no longer an angel. Right. I'm always reminded of a favorite quote, which is, there's a lot of versions of it, but plans are useless, but planning is essential. Yeah. And it's been ascribed to a lot of people, but just that idea of kind of what you said, you've got to put the effort into thinking about what you're going to do, but the actual plan you create, you know, it's not going to, no plan survives contact with the enemy is another favorite of mine. So instead of like stressing about getting it right and using it as an excuse, no, my plan's not quite there. Maybe just another month, or, you know, maybe next quarter or next year. Realizing, hey, eventually you just got to jump in, right?
Yeah.
You're just going to do it. And luckily with kids, they don't give you a choice. It's just that they show up one day.
Yeah. I know it's really different in the States as far as like time off from work, like maternity and paternity leave. So we in Canada get up to 12 months. Actually, you can technically take up to 18 months, but you get just 12 months worth of payment, like maternity leave payment. But I remember coming home on day one and you're just kind of like, because we had just spent 3 days in the hospital and we're like, now what? Like, we got to do this all on our own. We don't have nurses to call and be like, hey, he's crying a little bit more, or like, we don't, like, how do you feed him? How do you do this? How do you do that? Like, the nurses show you, but they show you once or twice. And then you're there doing it on your own, but you have that guidance and that support. So if you're like, oh, I'm really struggling with diapers or whatever it is, you can ring in a nurse and they'll come and help you. But then I remember that first night coming home, it was like, we're on our own. Like, we have to do this all by ourselves now. And it's frightening the first little bit. Kind of like when you first start a business and you're putting yourself out there, especially if you're not earning income on the side, like I'm doing right now, which was not originally the plan, but it's what we're doing for now. But you're like, I have to just figure this out.
Like, oh, absolutely. I still remember, you know, when I was very young, so I started my first sales company. So I was 22. And so I had an office, and I still to this day remember, and actually the office that I was in, I had actually worked in before when I was a new sales rep, that had been the office. And so I ended up renting it when I started my own. But I still remember turning the key and going into the office and being like, excited, but it was like, oh crap. Like, I got to figure this out. Like, holy cow. Like, I have to fill this with people and furniture and nothing's going to happen until I do it. Yeah. There's a lot more similarities here than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It's at the end of the day though, it's such a rewarding challenge to work through, right? Like, very late in life as far as having a child for the first time, because I'm 38 now, and I've watched a lot of my friends do it, and it's the most rewarding thing you've ever done. I'm like, get out of here.
right.
And then you embark on that journey and you're like, okay, I get it. It is one of the most rewarding things you can do. And to me, I think the second most rewarding thing to do is to start and grow a business, because in most cases, what you're doing with your business is helping others, right? You're providing a service or a product that's addressing a need of theirs. And I think that's incredibly fulfilling as well, because you've also gone through the challenge of building a business, and you took it from nothing and you've grown it into something with a lot of support. And yeah, it's just, that's actually one thing I'll say. I have so much more respect. I always had respect, but I have so much more respect for single parents trying to do that all on their own.
Right. Oh my goodness.
And I kind of look at it the same way with business. Like, anybody who has done the majority of the work themselves, so much respect for them. Whereas if you've got a partner, I feel like that's just, it's not cheating, but it's, man, is that a nice support system to have, whether it's in business or raising a child. Because you can tag team, you can bounce ideas off each other, you can console each other when things are going a little rough. And I'm talking in both scenarios. So
take a shower every once in a while.
Yeah.
That's more the parenting thing, I think. Yeah,
sleeping, all of it. It's when, if you have a partner that you can fully trust and rely on, which I would say is definitely easier with the child side of it, because hopefully you've got your spouse, right? You can trust them. When it comes to business though, I can see why people treat it so with such severity as far as that decision to partner up with somebody, or at least they should. I now do. If I were to ever consider it, I'd be like, I'm going to be really picky with who I would partner up with at this point.
Absolutely. We had a guest on, Mark Beelen, who is a solo founder. And we were talking about the pluses and minuses of having a partner. And in some ways, you spend more time, if you're going to partner with somebody for a business, you spend more time with them. You've got more invested into the, you know, financial success and the long-term growth of that business with them than sometimes even your spouse. So you better pick the right person.
Yeah.
And I think too, for, you know, kind of solo founders, you know, this is something that's been important for me and a lot of people that I've worked with over the years, is even if you don't have an official partner, finding people who you can trust and rely on as that support network, maybe not for all the parts of the business, but for certain aspects in it, right? You know, even, and again, it sounds cliche, but find a good accountant or find a good lawyer, somebody that not only is competent, but you can trust, right, on a human level. Just like it's important to find a good babysitter. You can go have date night every once in a while.
Yeah.
When I asked you that question, again, it just kind of popped in my head. Here's the answer that I came up with of something that I was told as far as parenting advice, but now makes a lot of sense as far as, you know, entrepreneurship. And this person said, you're going to be very nervous as a new parent, but don't get too scared. It's really hard to kill a baby.
Hmm.
Which sounds in some ways really dark, but this woman had five children. So like she knew what she was talking about. She's like, don't do anything really stupid. But babies are going to get bumps. They're going to get, you know, they're going to fall down and bang their head. Things are going to happen. They're resilient, right? You know, do the best you can. But in the end, you just keep pushing forward, right? And that's something that has really stuck with me, because, you know, even when we had Liam, I was just like, okay, this is completely overwhelming and scary. All right, you know, there's 8 billion people or however many billion people on the planet. They all made it. I can do this. And sometimes the same thing with businesses. Like we were just saying, hey, you can plan as much as you want. Things are going to happen. And that's absolutely true. And you're going to make a ton of mistakes. And that's not even just being a new business owner. Like if you are responsible for a business, you are going to make mistakes. But barring some really big screw-ups, you can get past them. You there are ways to respond to challenges, to mistakes, to errors, to just bad luck. And it's very rarely the end of the world, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what I would say is a good similarity, or is something that's similar between both parenting and running a business. So this has been a wonderfully bizarre tangent. I didn't think we were going to talk about parenting this much.
Yeah, I think it's to add to that, I think where it differs a little bit, though there's, I'll add some more context to that in a second, but I think most people will quit the business or their business, their entrepreneurship journey a lot because it gets challenging before it actually is like the business is dead in a sense. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Whereas with a child, you can't really, I mean, like
you're in it to win it.
Yeah. There's people that do walk away from their kids and I can't say no judgment, but like, there's got to be like that's a tough decision, I'm sure, but you're usually like you're in there. You can't just walk away for the most part anyways. But with a business, I feel like as soon as it gets challenging, most people go like, well, I can walk away from this, right? With a kid, you can't so much.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's something that often comes up and really is a challenge for people, is knowing when to give up, because there are times where it makes complete sense as a business owner to be like, cut bait, you know, this is not working. And you're just, you know, whether it's throwing good money after bad, or you're miserable, like it's okay to walk away. You know, I'm thinking of I think it might be a Seth Godin book, but maybe it's somebody else. It was called The Dip. And, it was a very simple book, but the whole premise was, you know, there to any good endeavor, there is this dip, this part where it's really hard. And the key to success is not being able to push through that, but the real key to success is to know how to approach that dip, realize that things are bad, and then walk away. Because it's not about succeeding all the time, but it's about knowing how to fail. You know, we hear about failing fast, right? It's kind of a common term, but really that idea, like it's okay to walk away as opposed to just beating yourself up for years, trying to make something happen. That's never going to happen.
That's very true. That's where counsel comes in, like mentors or that type of influence. I think that's where there could be a lot of value there, because if you're that solopreneur who's doing it all on your own and you're just banging your head against the wall trying to make this business work, but you're not seeking perspective from other entrepreneurs who have been successful, that's the key thing.
right.
Then you might be stuck in that position of persisting when maybe you shouldn't, or maybe it's time to like, maybe you're kind of on the right track, but you just need that little shift, or in the tech industry, they say pivot, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's why it's important to seek perspective from people who have the results that you're looking for, which goes to the same with parenting. Go to the people who you actually like their kids, right? If you don't like their kids, don't ask them for parenting advice.
Or more to the point, if you don't like their kids, when they give you advice, which they will, you just nod and smile and then don't follow it.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you're right on that idea of having somebody, and I think maybe even a wrinkle here is having somebody who you respect and who you will listen to, right? Who, I mean, that's kind of the key to, I think, a good mentor for business or parenting or really anything, is somebody who you can appreciate that they have insights, that they have perspectives that are valuable, but who you also know, and maybe you won't listen to them the first time, but you know, like you can put your ego aside a little bit, because I've definitely also seen where, and especially in the entrepreneurial world, where somebody's got a big ego, they think they're doing something great, and you know that they're getting advice sometimes from you or from someone else that like, hey, there's a big blind spot here that they just can't see, right? And then they're out of luck. So it's kind of like, it's not just about finding a good mentor, but finding a mentor that you will listen to. Can yeah. I mean, have you found any ways that, because you know, and obviously we're both coaches, but is there anything that you found as far as helping people, whether they're clients or just, you know, anybody in general life, like find mentors that they listen to? Or, I mean, I guess parenting would be another place. Like, how do you find good mentors for parenting?
That is a really good question. And one thing I just want to clear up, I'm actually not a coach. But I help coaches, right? And part of the reason maybe I sound like a coach is because I'm around them all the time, hence like the podcast and everything. So to find somebody who you like, I think there's a few different ways. One of the things, actually, like the topic that we discussed on my podcast was networking. I think that's a great way of doing it. Like just getting out there and connecting with people, building relationships, being strategic about who you're going to build that relationship with, and sometimes aim a little higher than maybe where you're currently at, because those are the types of people that you're probably trying to emulate or model after. But I think there's a lot of value in connecting with people that are on a similar level as you, because you can get a lot of unique perspective from them. But then I also suggest, and I heard this somewhere and I love the advice, but you should try and find connections of people who are maybe like one or two steps behind you so that you can be the coach and mentor to them. And then, so you've got like this three level thing going. So you seek people to mentor you. You build those relationships. You build relationships with people that are kind of similar level as you, and then a couple people behind. And now you've got like all three levels kind of covered. And I thought that was a really cool approach and something I implement for sure when I'm connecting with people and looking to build those more long-term solid relationships. But as far as like selecting who's a good mentor, obviously you got to get along with them and you just innately feel this connection right away and a level of comfort. Cause if you don't, it's going to be tough to really open up and take advice from them.
For sure. I love that. That kind of three-pronged approach, right? Find your peers. And because I think a lot of times people actually, we had talked about networking on your podcast, but just in as far as the relationships we form, a lot of times people think that they have to go find those rock stars. I mean, this is definitely something that comes up a lot in mentorship and networking, is like, I got to find the person who is at the top of the game, the number one person. And there's nothing wrong with trying to connect with those people, but everybody does, right? Everybody wants to connect with the star in your field. So maybe try that. But to your point, like connect with the people who are at your level or maybe just a little ahead. But then I love that idea of also going like, let's go back to parenting. Like if you know somebody who's about to have a kid, be like, hey, let me help you out. Let me give you some, if they want it, right? But, you know, kind of provide that support network for them too.
Yeah, it's just the idea of like paying it forward kind of thing. If you're going to but if you have a desire to get guidance and mentorship or whatever it is, you got to be willing to give it just as much, right?
When you hang around all these coaches, which, you know, again, I'm sorry that you have to hang around a bunch of coaches. That would drive me nuts. And you have kind of a unique perspective because of your role. Like, what are the things that when you look at the successful coaches, and I mean, you talk to a lot of people, that they do kind of have in common when they're working with clients, or kind of the approaches they have to working with clients? I know you're not necessarily there like watching them work with a client, but have you noticed any similarities? I'm just curious.
Yeah. I think for so far, what I've noticed is, there's always a very authentic and genuine desire to help people achieve the goals that are important to them. Right.
Okay.
And they typically do that through asking questions and using those questions to help guide, not even guide, I guess, is almost to help that client gain clarity around what it is that they're trying to say. A lot of us, we struggle with really articulating our thoughts, especially like those deep down desires that we've probably not spent enough time really thinking about. But it, I just get a really, like the coaches that I've talked to so far, they're just really good at it, like helping you get that out of yourself. And then they help you contextualize and clear it up by asking you these really great questions. Did you mean this or this? Or let's define that a little bit more, or let's dig in. And just, they're fantastic at that, which is partly training, partly experience. And I honestly think there's just a natural desire a little bit within them. That is why they become such great coaches.
That's, I think you're right on the money. You know, I of course I can think of my practice where, you know, I tell anybody, I go, I don't have your answers. My job is to help you figure out your answers and then pay attention to them. Right. But it's so going back to parenting, that also makes me think, like, one of the things that you can also look at as far as getting a quote unquote parenting mentor. Again, we get so much advice from people as a new parent, is really trying to define what does being a good parent mean to you, right? Because there's so many things that people mean when they say, I want to be a good parent. But if you can actually decide and define and have clarity, like you said, about what that really means, it actually makes life a lot easier. You know, one of the things that a friend of mine says is my job is not to keep my kid happy. My job is to keep my kids safe and help them become a good person when they grow up. Now, mind you, she's also makes sure that her kids are, you know, usually very happy as well.
Yeah.
But she has no problems, you know, in this case, that guides how she disciplines. She's like, you know, my job is not to make you always think I'm the greatest. My job is to help you learn boundaries and skills and how to interact with the world and take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And so even that idea of maybe finding somebody in your life, if you're a parent, to be like, hey, help me get clear about what being a good parent is in my mind.
Yeah. No, I think that's it comes down to defining, like you said, defining what it means to you. And if you've got a coach that's going to help you with that, or a mentor or whatever it is, it's first defining it and then figuring out how to execute on that. And usually when you define it, it ends up being a lot simpler than you think it is. It's very rarely something super complex, but it really does make things a lot easier once you truly understand what you mean when you say, I want to be successful is another one, or I want to be a good parent. Right.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, and that you just made me think, like, you know, what if you sat down with your partner and said, you know, what does it being a good parent mean to you? Because, and maybe you've had that, I think I've had somewhat that conversation with my wife, but, you know, again, you might, whether it's parenting or business, the idea of really having clarity with the people that you're working with and say, like, okay, what does success mean here? What does good parenting mean? What does good growth mean? And why are we doing this? But kind of spending time on that can be really powerful. And I think, again, we just often make these assumptions about it, right?
Yeah. It really boils down to just good communication, to be honest.
Gosh, I really wish things were more complex and not as cliche, but they become cliches for a reason, right?
Exactly. Same with, like, unfortunately, stereotypes. Stereotypes are there because of just this reoccurring evidence that we see, or the illusion anyways. But when it comes to personal growth and whatnot, there's so many, it just, what's the term that, anyways, I can't remember his name now, but first principles, you can boil almost everything down to probably a handful of principles. And as long as you follow those principles, you'll probably be fine. We just like to overcomplicate things.
Well, we want to overcomplicate things, and we want to not accept, it's kind of like my whole beef with life hacks, right? Or business hacks. Like, there's a great saying, don't learn the tricks of the trade, learn the trade. And we go, but I don't want to spend the time and the energy. And you're like, well, instead of just searching for shortcuts, in the same amount of time, you could actually just learn to do what you're trying to do, right?
Yeah, that's true. I've definitely been guilty of that, where I was like, you know what, I'm just looking for the quickest way of doing it. And then like 3 hours later, I'm like, I still haven't found it. I bet you I could have learned this on in that 3 hours.
Guilty as charged. So don't worry, it's not just you. All right, here's my point in the podcast where we do the completely non-sequitur switch. So, because we got to talk, like I could talk parenting and entrepreneurship for hours with you, but we got to talk about beer. Sours?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot what? You asked that question. So sour beers, one
you
in particular.
You and Ryan Roden, my friend, you guys got to hang out because he's trying to convince me that sours are delicious.
And oh, they're amazing.
I've just not had the right ones. Okay. Try to sell me. Go for it.
Try one called, I speak French, so I'm going to say it with the French accent, but Duchesse de Bourgogne or Duchess de Bourgogne. It's a Belgian beer. It's called a Red Flemish. Those are my favorite kind of sour beers. It's got like a sweet and sour kind of taste to it. It's hard to describe because it's a very unique style of beer when you're used to drinking your lagers and your pills and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And then you switch over to a sour, you're like, what is this? This is not a beer, but it's just it's a very different and unique style of brewing that involves different yeast or something like that. I don't know the whole process behind it. All I know is that it usually is a longer process, which means that they're usually a little bit more expensive than your standard kind of beers. I equivalate them to wines. If you like wines,
okay,
you'll probably like sour beers because they have such wide-ranging flavors and just they're very unique. A lot of them will tend to be a little bit on like the citrusy side, hence being like a sour,
right?
Which I like that. I like that pucker your lip kind of feeling. But okay. Yeah, no, I highly recommend trying sours.
Okay, so what is your sales pitch if the person, i.e. me, is not a wine drinker? Now you're out of luck. I'm a
That's tough
one
because I just said they're more expensive. So you're like, nope, don't want that.
No, not necessarily. I mean, I drink very good beers, right? Okay, I like the stouts and the porters. I drink some not necessarily inexpensive beer sometimes because, as you said, it's all about what it takes to make it. And yeah, you can do your. You can do your Miller Lights or your Canadian, so Labatt or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, I'm not a big fan. But you know, if you're gonna have small batches and put some craftsmanship and some time and love in it, it's gonna be more expensive. That's not the problem.
Okay.
But So you're saying you dig that. So
yeah, I like that. Yeah, okay. Like sour candies, like, you know, when you pop a sour candy in your mouth like it like sucks all the saliva out and you got that pucker feeling. There are some sour beers that have that kind of flavor to them.
Okay. Well, I know, those are the ones I've tried, but okay, I'll go back and try again. Are there any non-sour beers that you're digging these days?
There is... not a lot because I actually stopped drinking beer a few years back because I realized I didn't really like the lagers and stuff like that. But
all right,
my brother-in-law introduced it's a peanut butter stout, I think it was.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That one I was like, wow, that's really good.
Oh man, I'll tell you what, when they do was it from here in the States or is it from up there?
Good question. I don't know. It probably was from an American brewery. I'm pretty sure it was. Okay.
Cause there's a couple that, I've had some really bad, I mean, that's a peanut butter stout is basically something that is either going to be just garbage that you put in your mouth or, transcendent. Mm-hmm. Like there's no middle ground, right? They either get it completely right. I don't even remember whose it was. I had one that tasted like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
That would be delicious.
It was. And I remember I was at Miller's Pub, which is a very old school bar in downtown Chicago. I was with my then girlfriend, now wife. And I just remember having that, and she wasn't super into dark beers either. And I had this and I was like, you have to try this. I remember she was like, oh my God, like, how is that even possible? And I'm like, I don't know, but I'm going to have another one. And I did. And then I stopped because I think it was like 9% ABV or something. I'm like, and I'm done.
Yeah. Sours are actually usually a higher alcohol content. Seven and above is quite common.
Okay. All right. Well, I will keep myself open. As I said, Ryan Roten, who's one of our guests on the show, is out in Colorado, and he's just convinced that I have not had the good ones
yet. I agree with him.
So apparently there's a whole list of people who want me to try. So I'll open myself up to some sour beers. Before I dig myself any other holes, I think this sounds like a good place for us to wrap up. Every guest I have on, I always ask them the same question, and I'll ask it to you. What's one piece of advice that you'd give someone to help them have a better day today?
It's totally off topic because we didn't even touch it, but it's the one thing that when I applied to my life made probably the most significant change. But I would actually suggest everybody pick up the habit of meditation.
Do it every morning. It's super powerful.
Yeah.
Love it.
Once I started it and find a program or an app that kind of like eases you into it. Don't assume that you have to like jump in and start doing 20 minutes a day because it's actually quite difficult to do that. But like work your way up to a level that you feel comfortable with or you have the capacity to do. I do 15 minutes every morning and it's literally has been the one thing that has impacted my entire life the most out of all new habits I formed.
Cool. And I think you're absolutely right. You got to ease yourself into it. 20 minutes might not sound like a long time, but if you're not used to it, after about 3 minutes, you just start twitching a little bit.
Yeah.
So take your time. Awesome. Chris, what's the best way if somebody wanted to follow up, get in touch with you, what's the best way for somebody to do that?
Yeah, best way would be my website, which is getcoachedpodcast.com. That's the website where I obviously host and run the podcast. And it's also just the best way to get a hold of me for anything else. So whether it's the podcast or funnel services that I do.
Perfect. And we'll, of course, make sure to put all those links in the show notes. And also want to say thank you to Beguile Brewing. I've been drinking the Beguile Blonde, and it is now a very empty can. I did pour it into a glass because that's the right way to enjoy beer. But this is a really nice light blonde ale. I really enjoyed it. They have great stuff. They can be found throughout Chicago and Illinois. And I think they're actually branching out to some of the other Midwest states. So definitely try to find them. They're fantastic. And as always, thank you for spending a little bit of time with us today. I appreciate you giving us a little bit of attention in a noisy, busy, loud world. If you've enjoyed what we've been doing, appreciate a review or a rating on your favorite podcast app. And of course, the best way to find out about a podcast is from a friend. So if you're digging this, please tell somebody else about it. And with that, I wish you a fantastic day and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.